Hey, everybody. This is Pat. It's been a little while. I wanted to drop in here to tell you about a brand new Gimlet show I think you'll love. It's called The Nod, and it's all about Black culture, and it's co-hosted by Eric Eddings. You might remember Eric from the Undone episode, The Deacons, which he reported about a group of Black men who took up arms to fight back against the KKK in the 1960s. The Nod, which Eric hosts with his best friend, Brittany Luce, has lots more stories like that one. If you're a fan of Undone, you'll really like their newest episode. It's kind of an Undone-style story about the fashion world and race and this wild night in 1973 where a battle happened in a dilapidated French palace. And by the end of it, everybody in the room knew that fashion had been changed forever. After you hear this preview, be sure to go and subscribe. You can hear the show every week on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen. So here's The Nod.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod. I am Brittany Luce.
And I'm Eric Eddings.
So, Eric, if I tell you to name some famous fashion designers, like what names come to mind?
Ralph Lauren.
I mean,
Uniqlo.
Uniqlo is a store,
Zara.
Not a person. Zara is also a store, not a person.
Gucci.
Yeah.
Gucci is a fashion designer. Yves Saint Laurent or YSL.
Yeah.
True Religion.
also a company and not a person.
Okay. Marc Jacobs.
Yes.
See,
so
I know things.
You got it. So you know what this show is about.
Like the nod. Yes, I know. I'm familiar.
Right. So what is something that you noticed that all the people that you just named had in common that may be at odds with the premise for the show?
They are not Black. I can say that definitively.
Yes. Most of the big designers, people who are, you know, showing at Fashion Week and whose clothes are going to be in your fancy department stores and whatnot, most of those people are, in fact, white.
Except for Kanye West.
That's a good point. Fashion used to not always be like that, though.
Really? I don't know when this was.
Actually, in the early 1970s, things were a little different.
It was very diverse, and there were a lot of us designers at the time. And it was very open. You didn't feel discriminated against or anything.
So that's a fashion designer by the name of Stephen Burrows. Can you describe the scene for me a little bit? Like, what was it like to be in that world back then?
Work all day and party all night. We all ran around together. Mm-hmm. They would come to my house and steal all my clothes, and we would all go out at the same time and create quite a scene.
So you guys were like a squad. You guys were like a super group.
Yeah. Each designer had that kind of group around them. They had someone who was the DJ, someone who was the plant guy.
You said the plant? You said somebody who was the DJ, somebody who was the what?
The plant guy, the florist.
Oh. Wait, why would you, you'd have flowers like in the studio?
Everyone was into plants and flowers.
Oh,
and
I got you. Lord, I'm slow. And when Steven and his squad went out partying, like, they were easy to spot. I mean, these clothes were loud.
Turquoise, hot pink, yellow, green, red, purple, all in the same outfit.
So Steven's clothes were perfect for, like, you know, like 1970s disco nightclub. And his aesthetic was, like, really popular at that time. I mean, actually, you know, the entire New York fashion scene had a lot of Black influence. Like, let me give you a picture of just how diverse the scene was back then. Are you familiar with Bergdorf Goodman, like the fancy New York department store?
In name only. I have never been inside, but I have heard that name and I passed it. So yes, I know that.
So would you categorize Bergdorf Goodman as being, like, well known for its clothes made by Black people?
I would not, actually. I was about to be, yes, I would. No, not at all.
Well, I talked to this fashion critic, Robin Gavon, and she told me about this fashion show in 1969 that Stephen and a bunch of other people from the fashion industry were at. And it was called Basic Black at Bergdorf's.
You had all these socialites showing up, and there was this jazz band where the members were dressed in dashikis, and they served chitlins and collard greens.
Wait, they served chitlins at Bergdorf's?
Yes, they did. My hand to God, and that just delighted me to no end because it was just so strange and
I'm just
kooky.
I'm trying to picture something like that happening now, and it's not coming together. It's not coming together for me.
You know, it was a fascinating little blip.
That sounds way more lit than I thought it was going to be. I don't know what I was expecting in that moment, but I was not expecting dashikis and chitlins. I don't know.
This is, you know, you've never been to Bergdorf, so they could still be doing this now.
It's possible. I mean, clearly I'm at the wrong spot. TJ Maxx has failed me in this moment.
Okay, so, I mean, like, that's all pretty wild, right? Like, New York had this, like, popping black fashion scene with these, like, really amazing designers like Stephen. And they were putting on shows with chitlins at Bergdorf Goodman. And that's what I want to tell you about. Like, this incredible moment when black people were, like, actually, like, an influential, important part of fashion. And how, at the peak of that time, they actually helped put American fashion on the map, but like worldwide. It all happened on one night in 1973, and it was called the Battle of Versailles. Okay, so in order for me to tell you this story, you first have to understand a little bit of where exactly the American designers were on the fashion food chain, like internationally.
Okay.
So the French designers, like, they ruled the whole fashion world. And they took their fashion shows, like, very seriously. So, like, usually a show is totally silent. The models would come out, you know, very little expression, very stiff. And they would hold the number that would represent their outfit while they were walking up and down the runway.
So it's not like America's Next Top Model.
It's not like America's Next Top Model.
Because that's good.
Yeah, no. So, like, you know, the Americans were kind of, like, new to the whole fashion industry in the 1970s. Whereas the French, you know, they had a long history of dominating the fashion world. So you're familiar with the Palace of Versailles in France? You've heard of it, maybe?
I've heard of it.
It's where, like, French royalty lived, like, way, way back. Like, Marie Antoinette.
Let them eat cake.
Right, exactly. She was living in the Palace of Versailles. She was, like, a huge trendsetter. She was, like, in a way, the Rihanna of her time. And so, like, you know, as a result of her being who she was, Versailles kind of became, like, the epicenter of French fashion. Okay, so, like, now, like, the Palace of Versailles is, like, you know, one of France's, like, most popular tourist attractions. But in, like, the 70s, like, it was, like, long overdue for some major repairs. Like, it was just jacked up. And so the French were trying to raise money for this huge restoration project. And so when the Americans heard about this, they were like, this is our big opportunity. Like, what if we organized a benefit? You know, we get the American designers and the French designers to come together and put on a fashion show at the Palace of Versailles. The French people can raise their little money, and the American people can finally level up.
Get some shine.
Exactly, some shine. So the Americans brought up the idea to the French, and the French were, like, totally down. Here's our fashion expert again, Robin Gavon.
They did not particularly see it as any kind of competition because they didn't see the American designers as being competition for them.
So they weren't even on their radar, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a little bit like Serena Williams doing a charity tennis match against, you know, the top player from the local college. It's this idea of, oh, great, you know, we'll raise some money, it'll be entertaining, but really, I'm going to win this match. It's no big deal.
So each side was told to pick five designers. And Team France, I mean, they assembled an all-star team. They had Hubert de Givenchy, Emmanuel Ungaro, Pierre Cardin, Christian Dior, and Yves Saint Laurent, Even if you think you've never heard some of these names before, I mean, like, go back and just listen to, like, every Lil' Kim song ever recorded. Like, 3 of 5 of those names are going to come up. Bodies in Versace, headshots in Givenchy, ripping the foreign like Ricky Bobby, like Poseidon in the Maserati. But the Americans had nothing close to that kind of star power. See, like, for a really long time, America didn't really have any original, like, clothing designers. Basically, they would just, like, copy whatever came down the Paris runways and then bring that, like, bring those designs back and put them into American department stores. But then, like, starting in, like, the 60s, American fashion got, like, a lot more legit. Designers like Steven came on the scene and they started making like really interesting original designs, like, you know, club clothes.
His clothes didn't really offer a woman a lot of help, if you know what I mean. You know, there are a lot of clothes that, you know, you put them on and maybe they help suck you in a little bit to make you feel a little bit more toned. Steven's clothes didn't do that. I mean, they sort of slithered over your body and revealed it.
But still, even with all of these hip designers like Steven coming on the scene, the Americans couldn't really, like, shake their reputation as copycats. So they saw this show at the Palace of Versailles as, like, their chance to kind of, like, prove to the world, like, hey, we know what we're doing. We deserve to be here. So the Americans decided to put together a little dream team of their own. You know, and some of these designers are pretty famous now, but back then they were like really fresh to like the fashion world. They had Halston, Oscar de la Renta, Bill Blass, Anne Klein, and of course, Stephen Burroughs. Here's Robin again.
You know, I mean, he was the hot, buzzy young designer, and he wasn't inspired by French fashion. He had no hang-ups about having to prove himself in comparison to French designers.
It kind of sounds like Space Jam. Am I? Like,
no, I mean, no. It's kind of like the Americans are kind of like the Looney Tunes. Like,
yeah.
Like maybe the underdogs.
This guy from Jersey is Michael Jordan.
He's Michael Jordan, exactly. And then the French people are the monsters.
I wasn't too up on who all the French were, so I only really knew about Yves Saint Laurent.
See, Yves Saint Laurent didn't follow the rules of French fashion, which was appealing to Stephen. Stephen didn't care about French designers or society life or anything like that. He got the inspiration for his clothes from, like, his life, just being a young guy in New York City. And he was really inspired by all the Black models that were working in the industry back then.
Black girls were dominant in New York at the time. They just were more exciting, more museful, I'd have to say, museful.
One of Stephen's muses was a woman named Beth Ann Hardison. What was the role of the model in fashion in the 70s?
The fashion model, especially the runway model, she was queen. I mean, she was the one who basically, you know, helped deliver what was being seen by the world.
What was it like to be a Black model during that time?
It was good in a sense because it was all... Everything was happening. Everything was creative. Everything was wonderful at the time. So things could just happen naturally. And remember, we just came off the, you know, civil rights movement, too, with Black is Beautiful. That whole theme happened. So it was to a point that you didn't think about, oh, that's a Black girl.
Beth Ann was Stephen's house model and one of his assistants. And, I mean, I guess to give you, like, a picture of what she looks like, she was skinny. She had, like, this deep brown skin. She had these huge, like, brown doe eyes. And she had, like, really closely cropped hair, like a tiny little afro. It was so pretty. And, you know, before she became a model, like, Beth Ann is just a girl from Brooklyn. Like, she used to, like, street fight when she was a kid.
Word.
No, she was like 9, 10, 11, like she used to get into street fights. But she also put a lot of energy into dance when she was a kid. And she knew how to serve a look.
I was well known to be really a good entertaining model.
Mm.
And I always knew about the stage and how to, you know, win a crowd, you know. Because as a child, I was a child tap dancer. And once I hit the runway, that became like home to me.
So the way Beth Ann explains it, like, black girls kind of brought something special to the runway. Like, when a black girl was modeling, she wasn't just, like, coming down the runway like some sort of mannequin. Like, when a black girl was coming down the runway, those clothes were hers.
So when it came down to us on that runway, the white girl had to work twice as hard as her black counterpart. Because the black girl, that was like freedom for her to be up on her stage.
So the Americans picked 36 models to join them at Versailles. 10 of them were black, including Beth Ann. And, you know, now that they had their models, their dream team was ready to go. So they start preparing for the show. You know, they're renewing passports and choosing outfits and, you know, and they're getting excited. Like, the anticipation of the whole night is building. And right before they're supposed to leave, they find out that Women's Wear Daily, which, Eric, is like basically like the Bible of fashion. So Women's Wear Daily, they've been writing these previews of the show, and they kind of started playing up this rivalry between the French and the Americans.
They started saying, it's the Battle of Versailles. It went from a nice little church meeting, so to speak, to an all-out brawl in the Harlem bar. You know, everybody was involved was getting a little nervous, like, What do you mean? We didn't think we were going to battle.
Yeah.
We didn't think we were going to compete. You know, now the pressure's on.
So the week of the show arrives, and the Americans get on a plane to Paris. And according to Robin, like, these models were, like, living it up. I mean, on the plane, they're, like, you know, smoking a little bit of weed, just trying to take the edge off.
Damn.
And for a lot of the models, like, this was their first time, you know, going to Europe or leaving the country. I mean, like, this was exciting. I mean, just imagine, you know, you're pulling up to the gates of, like, you know, one of the most beautiful, ostentatious, most famous European royal palaces.
We were in a cold castle. There was no heat. And the designers threw a fit, and they had to bring food in and toilet paper. There was not even toilet paper for the girls in the bathroom.
So right off the bat, there's a lot of drama. You know, the French, they were kind of running around the theater, and they were rehearsing with all of these different set pieces and costume changes, you know, and they ended up not leaving any time for the Americans to rehearse. So the American choreographer barely had any time to work with any of the models. So Stephen and a few other designers were actually forced to just, like, make up some last-minute choreography.
Off the dome.
Right, off the dome. And to top it all off, there was a problem with the scenery. The American set designer totally screwed up. The set that he built didn't fit because he measured it in feet instead of meters.
Fucking metric system.
Exactly.
Man.
And so the French people were looking at them and they were like, y'all suck.
They were very critical of us during the week. Like, what are they doing? They didn't do very much. We hadn't done anything like scenery like they had.
Did they say these things to you guys or did you just kind of hear whispers?
They did.
That's rude.
It's rude, but it's very French.
So things are getting pretty tense at this point.
But they could see my, you know, my calm, and they were counting. They kept saying they were counting me, which puts more pressure. I knew that what we had was good for all I knew, mm-hmm. but you don't know what the other guy has, but you know that whatever they've always had has always been brilliant.
It's not looking good at this point.
It's not looking good. All right, so Team America has no set, no moves, and no time whatsoever to impress a bunch of stuffy French people. How in the hell are they going to pull this off? You will find out right after the break. Okay, so to set the scene, it's November 28th, 1973. It's the evening of the Americans' big debut.
It was actually quite a sort of romantic and dramatic night because there was this very light snowfall.
And as our fashion expert, Robin Gavon, was telling me, all these lavishly dressed, high society guests are, like, basically just gliding into this beautiful theater.
The pathway leading through the courtyard and to the theater, I mean, it was lined with these men wearing sort of the full livery of the, you know, the red jackets and the powdered wigs. All the women were wearing designer gowns from people like Madame Gray and Saint Laurent, and there were incredible jewels that a lot of these women, you know, had pulled out of the vault. Some of them were wearing tiaras. I mean, they really pulled out the stops.
So in the audience, you've got a ton of European superstars, like the Princess of Monaco, you know, like Princess Grace, like she was there. But then it's time for the show to start. So the curtains open and the French are up first. And they've got like a live orchestra and like really elaborate sets. It all starts with this Cinderella theme, and there's this giant pumpkin carriage on stage.
They had performance after performance after performance after performance. I thought they were going to shoot somebody out of a cannon after a while. It was so much going on. We were like, whoa.
It was kind of like a Broadway show, like very over the top. And even though the show itself was over the top, like the models were a little more subtle. Like they were kind of more like statues in motion, just like showcasing the clothes instead of like characters. I mean, and they had this show planned out to a T. Like they had Josephine Baker come out and sing this song about how much she loved France and France was her country forever.
That's shady because Josephine Baker is actually American.
Yes.
Like, that's a little dig. Even
I
see
that. I thought
that
was shady, too. So that was their big closer. The whole show overall lasted for almost 2 hours.
And there was an intermission, the sort of blissfully boozy intermission, which had them close to, you know, midnight practically. And then it was the Americans' turn to perform.
So the Americans, they didn't have a live orchestra. Their music was on tape, and it was all reel to reel.
Once you turned it on, that was it. And so there were built-in pauses to account for when one designer's show would end and the next designer's presentation would begin. But if anything was off, you know, if models failed to walk out at precisely the right moment, you could end up with everything kind of going awry.
So one of the other American designers goes first, and thankfully, none of her models messed up the music cues. And then it was Steven's turn. What did you tell them in terms of how to walk, like how to move down the runway?
I didn't have to tell them anything. They knew. That's why they were there, because of the way they walk.
How did they walk?
Oh. Strong, confident, sexy. Having fun, smiling. You just would send out girls one by one, and then all the girls walk forward to the stage front and start voguing. Of course, we didn't call it voguing then. It was just posing. Lift your arms and throw your hip out. It's just showing off in front of a group of people.
So Steven's models are wearing his signature bright body-hugging clothes. And they were twirling and voguing and posing and jutting out their hips. I mean, it could have been the club. And one of the last models out was Beth Ann Hardison. This is the Brooklyn girl, the tap dancer, the street fighter. And she is wearing this like gorgeous, like sun yellow gown. Like, it reaches down to the floor, and it extends, like, way, way back. It has this long, long train. And it's not like, you know, Steven's usual jersey fabric. Like, this is, like, silk, and it's woven. Like, it kind of has this, like, a couture feel, but, like, it's something completely new. She was ready to make a grand entrance. Unlike the classical music that the French used, the Americans made the decision to, like, bring in regular people music, like the music of the moment, like stuff you'd hear at the club. Songs like the Creative Source cover of the famous Bill Withers song, Who Is He and What Is He to You?
And I came down, coming down fierce. I came down to win. I came down to let them know that we were here. And I mean, in every step I took, I rumbled. I could hear a drum, the beat of the, it was almost like I could hear percussion in the music. And I used that percussion that way I walked. I could hear the melody now in my head, you know, and walking to it. In Stephen's presentation, all our dresses were done with trains. And he had a pinky holder where we had it on our fingers when we walked. And by the time I got to the end of the stage, I threw mine down and stared the audience until I wouldn't move until they felt the experience. I was shaking. Tears were in my eyes when I stood there, but I knew the purpose.
At first, I thought something went wrong, but then it turned out it was applause. They were completely freaked out.
And that's when they started to stomp their feet and, you know, bravo, bravo, bravo. And then they said, get Stephen, get Stephen. And Stephen comes running over and I'm staring the crowd down. And it was quite something.
The French using so uptight. It was wild.
We didn't think anything that could happen after that that would be as great as that moment. And believe me, we knew that we then had not come to fail. We had come to win, and we were winning.
The French show took 2 hours. Our show took 37 minutes, and we killed them.
Josephine Baker found Beth Ann Hardison, and she was like, I want to come backstage and meet the girls.
Beth, you have to take me back. You have to take me backstage. And I took her backstage to meet the girls. And, of course, the girls died. They were so inspired that they met Joe Baker. And Josephine was saying, oh, my God, I'm so proud of everyone. Because she's originally American and of color. And to see these girls do what they did and how they were showcased, it meant everything.
So the Americans, they've won back Josephine Baker, and they've shown the French that they're not just copycats, that, you know, they actually have something original to bring to the table. How did you feel after the show?
Triumphant, because Saint Laurent told me I made beautiful clothes.
What did that mean to you, Yves Saint Laurent telling you that you made beautiful clothes?
It made my trip.
So if you're thinking about it like a battle, then it seems like the Americans won.
Yes.
So, like, what did you notice as far as immediate responses? Like, how was it talked about in the media?
It wasn't. There may have been a little blurb in Women's Wear, the society page, but that's about as far as it went.
It was a great thing that we went over and did it, and then we came back. They said, yay, yay, right on, clap, clap, and then you went back to your job.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's rough, man.
It is rough. But slowly, like in the months after that, all of a sudden, these black models start working.
Where? In France or in...
In Europe.
They had never seen so many black girls in one place at the same time performing, and especially in the fashion show.
There were a lot of girls who became... like a muses for European designers, like Givenchy.
Yeah.
After he saw those girls at the Versailles show, he like started booking them for his shows. He had an entire like group. They called it a cabine. Mm-hmm. His whole cabine was like black girls.
Yeah, because they had the sauce.
Because they had the sauce. So like they started getting work. And then after that, you know, you have models like Iman.
I know Iman. Yeah.
Yes. Beverly Johnson, Naomi Campbell, Veronica Webb. And Beth Ann, like, she got a lot more work after the Battle of Versailles.
The model of color was recognized in a proper way. So there's a lot that happened from that show that was more than, you know, just going and winning and walking away.
And that's deep considering, like, not many people actually knew that this thing happened.
Exactly. But the thing is, you know, that bump in popularity, it only lasted until, like, the mid-90s. See, like, fashion is all about trends. And for a while, black models were, like, all the rage. But then, you know, in the 90s, the Eastern European look starts to become more popular. And, like, heroin chic, which is basically just a lot of skinny white people.
And they openly called it heroin chic?
It was called heroin chic, yeah.
Questionable.
Yeah, that became, like, the trendy thing. And, like, the black cool look, it kind of fell out of style.
Wait, so what, like, but what happened to Stephen Burroughs?
So Stephen Burroughs, you know, he's still designing now, but the height of his career, like, pretty much happened in the 70s.
That kind of sucks. He seemed like he was on track to be, like, the man.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that really gets me is, like, this show, like, The Battle of Versailles, like, it was huge, you know? So you would think that, like, a whole bunch of other black designers would come up after him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also be able to make it really big. But, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, there are quite a few black designers that are, you know, making high fashion and doing really amazing things. But, like, there aren't as many as I think that there should be that have really big careers. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no one having, like, that Battle of Versailles moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no Chitlins at Bergdorf's.
Yeah. And that's a travesty. I'm serious. The version of the fashion industry that existed in the, like, 60s and 70s, as you described it, sounds really fucking cool.
You know, it's rare to be able to look far in the past and, like, long for the opportunities of yore as a black person.
Yeah.
That's not really our birthright.
Yeah.
But black people had it halfway decent.
Yeah.
You know? And I find myself in a very peculiar position as a black person of wishing for the past.
Yeah.
Or wishing for some of the sweetness of the past. And that is, it's weird.
Yeah. I agree. I want to go back to that. And I want to go back to Chitlins and jazz bands.
Maybe we should bring some to Bergdorf's. I'd be like, oh, I thought this was...
This is where it's supposed to be.
Do you know your history?
Exactly. Let me tell you a little story.
The Knot is produced by me, Brittany Luce, with Eric Eddings, Kate Parkinson-Morgan, and James T. Green. Our senior producer is Sara Abdurrahman. We were edited this week by Jorge Just and Annie Rose Strasser, with editing help from Alex Bloomberg, Pat Walters, and Morgan Jerkins. Engineering from Cedric Wilson and Bobby Lord. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Additional music in the show by Dr. Crosby, Little Richard, Philip Peterson, and Bobby Lord. Our fact checker is Nicole Pasulka. Special thanks to Argo Studios. If you're interested in learning more about the battle, check out Robin Givens' book, The Battle of Versailles, the night American fashion stumbled into the spotlight and made history. After the Battle of Versailles, did you start to see more of your own influence in the fashion industry?
Yes. Well, a lot of people got into knits, color, and sexier clothes, which today is the reigning thing.
Yeah. It is. It is.
It couldn't get any tighter.
It couldn't get... I mean, I'll tell you what. I started working at 21 years old, and when I started work, I had no appropriate office clothes. I had 11... spandex dresses. Eric?
Yes.
I want to be a pretty decent DJ.
In France or in...
Yes, in France. In the early 70s.
Sadly, that's not surprising.
Seriously.
But I was not expecting that.
It's time for the show to start.
This sounds awesome. Sounds really fucking cool.
Okay. What if we did a live orchestra?
I would not. No.
Totally screwed up.
Yeah, it's not looking good at this point.
It's not looking good.